Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Texas, Texans like to say, is like a whole other country. But by its sheer size, it influences what kids learn all over the country. The right-leaning Texas Board of Education is changing its curriculum, giving it a distinct Texas twist. Thomas Jefferson is out as an Enlightenment figure. Thomas Aquinas and John Calvin, men of religion, are in. So is creationism. Critics say this is history and science filtered by agenda politics. The board says it's basic education. This hour, On Point, the debate over new moves on textbooks in Texas and what American children will learn in the 21st century. You can join the conversation, who should decide what the kids learn in school? Will Texas? And do we still have a story we can all share? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Austin, Texas, is Nathan Bernier, senior reporter at the NPR affiliate there, KUT in Austin. Nathan, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So, Texas Board of Education mixing it up, making headlines all over the country again. It's not the first time. Texas has had a big influence for a long time on textbooks, Nathan.
Yes, absolutely. Texas is the only state in the country that has a uniform adoption process from K through 12. So what that means is that the State Board of Education approves textbooks from kindergarten through grade 12 for school districts to use. Now, school districts can go ahead and buy whatever textbooks they want, but if they want to get them for free, paid for by the state, they have to use the textbooks that are on the list approved by the State Board of Education. And those textbooks are produced to align with the curriculum guidelines that are also developed by the State Board of Education. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of money at stake. I mean, these textbook contracts, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, because there's more than 4 million public school students in Texas. So the stakes in this debate are very high.
And Texas is right in the middle, in a way, of a process right now. I guess a lot of water's under the bridge already, but it's not totally finished. Describe the process for us, and then we'll look at what's being proposed here. But what's the process, and where is the state in it, Nathan?
Okay, so the State Board of Education is a 15-member elected board. The members serve 4 years, and they run in partisan elections. So these are Democrats and Republicans, and they're charged. They have a number of responsibilities, really. But you know what we're talking about today is their responsibility to develop curriculum standards, and these are standards that are used to educate all public school students in Texas, at least the ones that don't go to charter schools. Now, the adoption process is a long process. It's multi-year. The first thing they have to do is they have to go ahead and develop the guidelines, and then they adopt the textbooks. So it's a multi-year process, and because it takes so long to adopt these curriculum guidelines, they do these revisions only once every 10 years. So whatever they vote to put into effect this time around, then it's going to remain in effect for a decade.
So you recently had a 10-5 party line vote. That is 10 Republicans, I guess, 5 Democrats. Party line vote on what, Nathan?
Well, there were a number of contentious issues that came before the state board. I know that one of them, the 10-5 vote, had to do with, if memory serves me correctly, which historical figures to include in the U.S. history guidelines. I know there was some controversy around whether to include rap music as an important cultural art form. There were also some questions surrounding which historical figures to talk about at the Alamo. So there's a component of identity politics in this. There's a very heavy, you might say, political component on top of the religious backdrop that informs many of the members on the State Board of Education.
The reporting said that there were days of pretty turbulent debate before it came to its vote. Who's arguing here in Texas?
Okay, so the State Board of Education, as I mentioned, is 15 members, and there's a pretty even divide right now between a group of social conservatives and another group of what you might call moderate Republicans, although they're not moderate perhaps by, Northeastern standards, but, in the context of the State Board of Education, people call them moderate Republicans and Democrats. It's a rough political line. It's messy. The votes don't always go exactly according to those two voting blocks, but when when it comes to contentious issues, you do see a pattern emerging between social conservatives on the one side and moderate Republicans and Democrats on the other. The social conservatives, their power, you might say, has peaked in this last session, this last round, because we had a primary here in Texas, and some of the at least one of the members of the social conservative bloc has been will be removed from power because of this primary. We're talking about Don McElroy, and he's sort of the poster boy of this religious conservative movement on the State Board of Education. He's an avowed member of the religious right, and he holds no bones about trying to. For him, it's just basic education. For people who are critics of these religious conservatives, he's trying to inject religion and Christianity into a reading of U.S. history.
So give us some examples. But just to clarify, it's not all over yet. These are proposed. When does this become the law of Texas or the way of the textbook?
The final vote on the curriculum standards is scheduled to take place in May. So there's a series of meetings. They make revisions. They hear from the public. They have public input sessions. They discuss among themselves. As you mentioned, these discussions often get very heated. That's nothing new. That's been happening for, you know, as long as I've been covering this, which isn't very long, a couple years, 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, every time you go to a State Board of Education meeting, it's always high drama, and people get really, sometimes there's tears shed. I mean, it's not the kind of typical, it's not what you would, it's not the typical American process that you find when you witness state bodies. You know, I come from Canada, and in Parliament, people are yelling back and forth. So in Parliament, especially during question period, yelling at the Prime Minister, it's not quite that animated, but it's you know, for someone unfamiliar with that process, it can seem very unusual. What's happening here, Tom, is that they have a final vote in May to take an adoption of the curriculum standards. You know, there's a chance that could be pushed back because it's been pushed back already. Mm. Once that's adopted, then they have to go and adopt the textbooks. And that's kind of a whole separate process. And that's not going to occur until after the November elections, which is important because textbook publishers are going to look at the political makeup of the State Board of Education, and they're going to, you know, they're going to develop proposals that they think will be adopted by the State Board. And if they, you know, they do have to respect the curriculum guidelines on the one hand, but on the other hand, they have to sort of respect the political wishes of the State Board. It's very political, obviously. Here's an example. The last time that the State Board of Education adopted the science textbooks, it was already included in the curriculum guidelines that students must learn about the strengths and weaknesses of the evolutionary theory. Mm. That never made it into the textbooks last time because largely because publishers took a look at the State Board and said, you know, if we put that in there, we might not get these textbooks approved. And as I mentioned, we're talking about deals worth hundreds of millions of dollars because the State Board adopts textbooks from K through 12. So it's possible that after November, when the makeup of the State Board changes slightly and power shifts away from the social conservatives, that we might see the textbook publishers might not entirely give the social conservatives everything that they want in the textbooks. But, you know, it's one of those things where you can't really predict what's going to happen. You kind of have to wait and see.
But so far, Nathan, the board has passed, more than 100 amendments to the proposed standards that were given to them. Give us some of the more notable amendments that pushed through by the Texas Board of Education here.
Well, as I mentioned before, there was the thing about omitting rap music
I don't think that's among the most notable, is it? I mean, we're talking about where Thomas Jefferson stands in history, and we're talking about separation of church and state. It's interesting, but
right.
What else have you got?
Okay. Well, there's the Thomas Jefferson thing, and this is something that was kind of, this was misreported, you might say, by some media outlets, and then on the other hand, misrepresented by some members of the State Board. My understanding is he was excluded from a list of influential philosophers. He was not excluded from the state standards. But this is, you know, grasped upon by liberal critics as evidence of the State Board going haywire, and then conversely, members of the State Board who have something to defend say, look, you know, you're totally getting this all wrong. There's that. There initially was. Some pretty serious debate about whether or not to exclude Cesar Chavez and Thurgood Marshall from the U.S. history standards, both very influential civil rights leaders. Mm. And that was just so insane, became so controversial that even the most socially conservative members of the state board agreed not to to adopt a standard that would omit those people. We also have there's some specific language about the role of Christianity and of capitalism. I mean, if I can just take a second
here. No longer called capitalism here, called
The free enterprise system.
Free enterprise system, because capitalism had bad connotations, some of the board members said. That it seems a bit odd. I mean, it is the American system.
Yes, I mean, and so it's these kinds of minutiae detail, like they might seem on the surface insignificant to a casual observer, but there's really a lot of politics and there's a lot of meaning behind these words. So it's very important to the people. I mean, okay, so there's another component that the Beat Generation was included in the standards, and some people had a problem with that because the Beat Generation was known by some to include sex and drugs and the rejection of mainstream values. You know, the list goes on. Board members rejected requiring history teachers and textbooks to provide coverage on the late U.S. Senator Edward Kennedy and new Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, while, you know, the late President Ronald Reagan was elevated to more prominent coverage. So you have, you know, a very political bent to this process. And the people who are involved in this say, yeah, there's a political bent. This is politics. We were elected by our constituents to give a particular representation of American history. And these, in our view and in our constituents' views, are important figures that we want our students to learn about.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about textbooks in Texas and what American children will learn in the 21st century. Nathan Bernier has joined us from NPR affiliate KUT in Austin, Texas. Joining me now from College Station, Texas, is Don McElroy, former chairman of the State Board of Education in Texas, a dentist from Bryan, Texas. He's been point man in the push for conservative textbook changes. On March 2nd, Mr. McElroy was defeated in his primary reelection bid for the board by Republican moderate Thomas Ratliff. McElroy remains on the board until his term runs out next January. Don McElroy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for this opportunity.
And from Madison, Wisconsin, Paul Boyer joins us, professor emeritus of history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. His textbook, The American Nation, is widely used in schools throughout the country and at one point was part of the curriculum in Texas. Paul Boyer, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Don McElroy, what's going on here? There are those who are saying, you know, you're trying to politicize the entire textbook in Texas and maybe the country. How do you look at what you're doing?
What I look at, what we're trying to do, is just basically to focus on the founding principles of our country that our students will be able to understand what made this country what it is. We're also focusing on accuracy and balance in our standards, and all we're doing is want to see good, accurate history taught to our children.
Let's take a specific example, and you can, you know, illuminate for us what's going on here. As I understand it, Mr. McElroy, the old explanation around the Enlightenment, where students were expected to learn, quote, to explain the impact of Enlightenment ideas from John Locke, Thomas Hobbes, Voltaire, Charles de Montesquieu, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and Thomas Jefferson on political revolutions from 1750 to present. In the new version around that, as I understand it, first of all, the word Enlightenment is gone, which is interesting, and I wonder if you can tell us why. But also, Thomas Jefferson is gone, and on that list, it just simply says, explain the impact of writings of John Locke, Thomas Hobbes, Voltaire, Montesquieu, Rousseau, Thomas Aquinas, John Calvin, and Sir William Blackstone. Help us understand this change, Mr. McElroy. What's going on here?
Well, that was an amendment was offered to our world history standards for the students to be able to understand the impact of ideas on revolutions around the world. And frankly, I think the original language where it talked about Enlightenment philosophers, Jefferson was, you know, built his ideas and philosophy on the Enlightenment ideas.
Yes.
But since we took the word Enlightenment out, I don't see why in the world we took Jefferson out, and I think we ought to put him back in. I want to make sure that that's a good, accurate representation of the ideas that led to revolutions around the world.
Well, why did you take the Enlightenment out? That's kind of a gigantic element in world history and thinking. Why is that gone?
Well, the Enlightenment is very, very important. Now, those ideas are described in our geography courses in the U.S. history course. I have no problem with putting the Enlightenment back in there because I know that the ideas of Montesquieu and these great philosophers were the foundation of ideas that our founding fathers, you know, wrote our government on. So I have no problem with putting Enlightenment.
But you voted to take it out and voted to take Thomas Jefferson out of that passage. What was your thinking around that at the time? Why?
Actually, when you're in the process of making lots of amendments, you're busy, you're all day long, you have time to reflect, maybe you'll change your vote. I think all politicians do that.
Paul Boyer, what do you see in the kind of changes that are being proposed here by the Texas Board of Education? Is this just a natural evolution? I mean, you know, textbooks change over time. Nothing is entirely free of politics. Is this the same old, or something new going on, Paul?
Well, in some ways, it's the same old, same old. We've had controversies over textbooks for decades, and Texas has been a center of this process for a very long time. In the 1920s, Texas had a governor, a woman nicknamed Ma Ferguson, whose husband, the governor, had been indicted and convicted on criminal charges, so she ran for governor. She was an opponent of the teaching of evolution in the public schools and literally took a pair of scissors and cut out passages about evolution from science textbooks and presented them to the publishers and said, you know, here's what you must remove. For years in Texas, a couple named Mel and Norma Gabler have been very, very active in scrutinizing textbooks and have had enormous power in the content of textbooks. For a number of years, as was mentioned, science textbooks were the focus, and the issue of introducing basically religious perspectives into science textbooks was the hot point of debate. The focus at the moment is now shifting to the social sciences and to history textbooks, but the history of Texas role in monitoring and shaping the content of textbooks at the state level is a very long one, and I think one that merits a lot of attention and debate.
But I guess the key question here is, do you see a degree of politicization here that is non-traditional, in as much as nothing can escape politics? No view of history can – it might escape – science might ought to be free, but history is pretty hard to keep away from politics. So is there some new degree or level here or not?
Well, historians are citizens and have their personal political views and vote. But as historians, we try to bring as balanced and complete a record of the past as possible. Certainly, politics cannot be totally eliminated from the process, but there are degrees to which the process can be politicized, and it strikes me that what we're seeing in Texas is a very intense degree of politicization of the process, reflected not only in specific individuals who are added or subtracted. Some of the names that have been proposed to be added, like Phyllis Schlafly, and organizations like the National Rifle Association.
And Rush Limbaugh.
And Rush Limbaugh. These are figures who are important in contemporary American public life and in the emergence of a free market sort of libertarian ideology, and they are being incorporated in textbooks. The college textbook that I'm involved in as a co-author has extensive coverage of Schlafly and the Christian Coalition.
But other things are out here. We've got the Declaration of Seneca Falls Convention, a big women's rights movement, out. The letters of John and Abigail Adams, out. The suffrage advocate Carrie Chapman Catt, out. Harriet Tubman, out as an example of good citizenship, out.
Yeah, there's a clear pattern that can be easily identified, and also in the curriculum standards at the sixth grade level, some of the points that were added were understand the poor record of collectivist, non-free market economic systems, identify and describe the effects of increasing government regulation and taxation on economic development.
But is that a problem? I mean, a lot of non-market economies have had pretty rough time over the years. I mean, China was dirt poor when it had a non-market economy. Now it's booming.
I guess as a historian, the problem I would have with this is there's a clear theme that emerges from these, that not only should students be aware of these various movements, but there's a clear implication that some are good and some are bad. And the sweeping terms that are used here, collectivist, non-free market economic systems, are opposed to free market systems, as though it's a black and white either or situation, and that's not the way historians think. There's a broad range of gray in the middle that needs to be looked at and thought about.
Don McElroy, I wonder how you look at this. I'm reading here from the National Review, old conservative journal, and they're looking here, and it says in regard to these changes, it says, in the battle over education, victory for conservatives should mean depoliticizing the textbooks, not politicizing them along conservative lines. Do you agree, Mr. McElroy?
Well, I agree that you don't want to just, quote, just politicize it to politicize it. I think they are those comments were made without talking to any of us on the board of what's actually happening. The way I see it is it was stated as the President signed the new health care bill, that we are heading in a fundamentally different direction. Well, our country, if our country's heading in a fundamentally different direction, I think it's very important that our country and our students in Texas know, well, what was the original direction? What was the direction? They need to know the old direction. If they know the old direction, the history, then they will be able to make wise decisions about whether this new direction is some place that we need to go. A lot of those things you mentioned about the Seneca Falls and that was not taken out by amendments by the board, okay, just to clear that up. Mm-hmm. On the economics, I think our economics section throughout was probably been one of the least controversial strands as it starts from kindergarten all the way up to the final economics course. We have really excellent economic standards. And to me, it's very simple. When you see a satellite picture of Korea by night, and look at the difference between South Korea and North Korea. And South Korea all lit up. You can see the difference of economies and what a difference it makes. I think that's an excellent standard. That's one I've been actually touting.
If I may look at what's in and what's out, here's one big historian who looked at the changes was Eric Foner, quite a major American historian. And I want to share his characterization with you, and you may agree or you may not with it. He says, conservatives want students to come away from a Texas education with a favorable impression of women who adhere to traditional gender roles, the Confederacy, some parts of the Constitution, capitalism, the military, and religion. They do not think, that is your board, Eric Foner says, students should learn about women who demanded greater equality, other parts of the Constitution, slavery, Reconstruction, the unequal treatment of non-whites generally, environmentalists, labor unions, federal economic regulation, or foreigners. What do you make of that as a characterization, Don McElroy?
Totally inaccurate. It's completely inaccurate. Take the Constitution. There's been a bunch made because there was a board member that made a proposal to add an amendment about the First Amendment and the description of the protection of, you know, constitutional protection of religion. And that was voted down. Therefore, they're making the big point, oh, well, these board members are voting, they don't want people to, our students to know about the constitutional protection of religious liberty. That can't be further from the truth. The language that was proposed downplayed the actual free exercise of religion that was guaranteed in the Constitution. I just was denied chairmanship. A lot of people say I was denied my chairmanship last May because of my religious beliefs. Also,
but you were just voted out in the primaries, right? I mean,
and in this last election, there was some very, very ugly attack ads that were making fun and mocking my religion. So, does anybody believe in religious liberty? It's me, and I'll tell you.
To be fair, Don, I think part of it had to do with your fight during the adoption of the science standards and you sort of leading the fight to ensure that students are taught the strengths and weaknesses or to analyze and evaluate the theory of evolution. And, you know, there was some controversy over the English language standards. I don't know what the final version of history is in your primary with Ratliff, but, you know, it was more than just about your religion, wouldn't you say?
Well, I'm just saying that that's what some people said played a major role in the thinking of the senators that did not confirm me. It was also a completely partisan vote. I had all the support of all the Republican senators, and I did not get a support of a single Democratic senator.
Don McElroy, stand by Paul Boyer, Nathan Bernier, if you would. We have a lot of listeners who want to join us, and I'd like to begin to bring them in. Warrensburg, New York. Linda. Linda, you're on the air. What do you think, Linda?
How do you do?
Very well.
My problem listening to this and reading about it and seeing it on TV is the blurring over the last 8 or 9 years of church and state. I mean, if you look at the history of Europe, when there was that blurring, when the church was running also the countries, you had no freedom whatsoever. And I think a few group of people, whether they're fundamentalists, Christians, or whether they're the far right, saying, this is what we're going to do. We're not going to have something where you're going to talk about a Thurgood Marshall. You're not going to talk about a Thomas Jefferson. You're not going to allow rap music, which I personally cannot stand. But it has a cultural connotation for a lot of people. And then to say, well, we're not going to talk about women's suffrage because, gee, these were women that did not want to follow the path. And I have 10 children, so I've been...
You've been on the path.
Stuff, but I also have a college education, and mm-hmm. I had my two daughters. Well, one that is a college, she teaches high school French.
Linda, our time is short. Let us pick up your church and state issue, because it's a big one. Don, what about that? Are you looking to pull back on the teaching of the separation of church and state here?
Absolutely not. This idea of the separation of church and state is clearly stated in the First Amendment, where it says there'll be no state establishment of religion. That is very important. That is what was meant by that. This wall of separation metaphor has actually gotten a little bit too strong, where people are saying, well, if you're religious, you can't be involved. That's kind of what they said in my election campaign.
And so you do also want to pull back on Jefferson's wall of separation idea? Oh, I thought that's
just the metaphor. Not. Mm-hmm. I don't want to pull back on the Constitution, because the Constitution says there'll be no state establishment of religion. But they actually promoted religion. And I think our students need to understand that they did. When they wrote legislation, if you read their documents, they promoted the idea of religion. There was not this. They wanted to have the free exercise thereof. And we need to make sure we do that. That amendment that was proposed by a fellow board member actually downplayed the free exercise of religion that's in the Constitution. So we're supporting the Constitution. I think we're supporting it accurately. And I think there is a role that you do not force your religion on. That's the last thing I would ever want to do, and that is not what we're doing. What I see we are doing on the board is we are promoting the original American values that this government was founded on. And this government was founded on the ideas of limited government, of liberty, of individual responsibility. What we see in our country happening today, and I think why this is such a big issue nationwide right now, is you see the change. You see us emphasizing big government, where the state has become more important than the individual. And to me, we're getting away from those basic principles. We need to know what direction was America founded on. That's what they need to know.
Mr. McElroy, stand by. Nathan, I'm going to lose you in just a half a minute here. Boy, well, you can hear current politics bleeding right into the discussion of history there in a nanosecond. I mean, Don says so himself. Mm-hmm. How are Texans receiving this? Is this generally a happy thing in Texas or controversial?
Well, I think the most vocal people tend to be critics of the State Board of Education. I mean, but you can look at what happened in the most most recent primaries. I mean, Don is an example. I think that he losing his primary is kind of an anomaly. If you look just south of his district, there was another that was very similar. You had a social conservative against a moderate Republican, a lawyer from Austin. And in that case, the social conservative, Ken Mercer, won handily. So I think that while the criticism is getting loud, that there's not a wholesale rejection of the politics on the State Board of Education, at least in Texas.
Nathan Bernier at KUT in Austin, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about textbooks in Texas and what American children will learn in the 21st century. The Texas Board of Education proposing some significant changes, and Texas has historically set the model for a lot of textbooks around the country. Now, it's a more digitized age these days. The impact may be a little less than it used to be, or it may not. Paul Boyer joins us, Professor Emeritus of History at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. His big textbook, The American Nation, has been used very widely around the country. Don McElroy is with us. He's former chairman of the State Board of Education in Texas. Lost a primary fight for re-election earlier this month, but has been very active in the changes that that board is proposing right now. Don, Paul, we've got a lot of listeners who want to come in here. Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Why do we always have to label everything as conservative or liberal? Why can't we just be truth seekers? Whatever happened to academic freedom? Just because creation science is in the Bible, well, Romans 13 talks about government. Are we supposed to remove all government courses from the public school system? We are so ridiculous in all this. Why can't we just seek the truth?
Well, what if politics are bending our understanding of the truth, Craig? Or do you think they're not?
Well, that is our biggest problem is politics, because everything's about votes, power, and money, and votes are determining everything, and it's ruining this country.
Craig, I appreciate your call and your perspective. Let's get one more right here. Milton, Massachusetts. Pilar, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just have a quick comment, really. I feel like by modifying these curriculums according to some political and or religious agenda, folks can do a real disservice to the kids that are being educated by not providing them with all of the information that's available. I think that we're sort of handicapping them in being successful in competing as they get older into sort of the global environment or what have you, and that people who who feel strongly about these particular historical figures or particular movements can sort of discuss those at home with their kids when they're, you know, helping them with their homework and having discussions about that.
Pilar, we've got it. There's Craig in Iowa and Pilar in Massachusetts. Don McElroy, how about I'm looking here, University of Texas professor David Hillis. He's got a group called 21st Century Science Coalition. He's very critical. He says if Chairman McElroy is successful in adding his amendments, it will be a huge embarrassment to Texas, a setback for science education. Craig says let's keep politics out of the discussion of this. Pilar says is worried about setting American school children back. Do you feel like you're, giving science education a setback, Don?
Well, I would love to comment on the science education. Our new science standards were passed last March. They've been in place for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And where there's been no lawsuits, there's been no problem with them because they have no religion, they have no creationism and intelligent design in those standards. What they do is bring intellectual, what I would call scientific integrity to our science standards.
I thought creationism was introduced as a
absolutely
as a
not. Absolutely not. If it was, you're within a lawsuit in a minute. What we have done is have scientific integrity restored to our science curriculum standards.
What does that mean specifically?
I will tell you exactly what it means. It means our students are going to analyze and evaluate scientific explanations concerning the complexity of the cell, for instance. That's a specific standard that was added. It's a scientific standard. What it does, it's like Richard Feynman, a famous physicist that was a very big outspoken person for scientific integrity. And he said science is a leaning over backwards to show where you may be wrong. It's a leaning over backwards to present both sides.
Now, as I understand
and
it,
that's what we've done.
You believe the
that's
complexity of the
standards.
Cell is a kind of disproof of evolution, if I understand correctly, Don.
Well, all I want our kids to do is be able to explain it. According to the idea of evolution, the complexity of the cell has all arisen by unguided processes. And therefore, let's see the scientific explanation.
Tom, could
yes,
I
Paul.
Could I
yes,
reenter?
Yes. Yes, please.
Could I reenter the conversation
mm-hmm.
here? You know, we can get caught up in a lot of detail of.
I don't think evolution is a detail, but
I'm going
but
back
please, yeah.
to the history, mm-hmm. approaching it from the American history perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk for a second about the process involved here. Mm-hmm. Many states, and I think probably most states, basically trust their teachers. They trust their local school districts and school administrators on the one hand, and they understand that their historians are trained and work in a certain way and based on research and new scholarship. And most states trust that that process of historians, trained historians on the one hand, local teachers in the classroom at the other, can be trusted to choose their textbooks and to choose how history will be taught. Texas has followed a different path, and a couple of other states. That is, the state will intervene, a kind of a nanny state idea that we don't trust our teachers. We must intervene, and we must control and shape what the content of the textbooks is. That's a model, and it's one that Texas has used very effectively, and in a sense I admire what's gone on in Texas, because they have gained national power. 10 conservative members of the Texas State Board of Education have enormous power nationally.
So you admire that in what terms?
I admire that in purely in strategic terms, that they have understood ways that the political process
power
can work. In terms of its implications for history, for our students in the classroom, as the caller from Massachusetts mentioned, I think it's a matter of very serious concern. Is this a model that we as a nation want to follow? Japan has national textbook standards, and there have been severe and intense debates over the way Japanese textbooks treat Japan's invasion of China in the 1930s and the atrocities that were committed as part of that. Is this a model we want to follow as a nation of basically political and state control of our textbooks? And it's ironic to me that Texans, who profess to believe so strongly in liberty and individualism, have led the way in state control of textbook content.
Don McElroy, what do you say? Your teachers and educators did put up a version that, of course, then the board looked to amend, I guess, 100 or so amendments. But what about leaving this to teachers, educators, trained historians? What do you say to that? And Paul's critique.
Well, I disagree completely with the idea that we would want just to leave it to the professional experts and let them decide what is going to be taught. What we have in Texas is a process that is completely different from the Common Core standards that are adopted, been working on nationally, where there's been no public input. We have public hearings. We have a process where everybody's involved. In fact, everybody's involved right now around the country. This topic is incredibly controversial. You talk about national U.S. standards. I remember back in the 1990s when there was some national history standards that were totally condemned by the U.S. Senate. And that battle that was in the U.S. Senate back in the 90s is occurring right now in the Texas State Board of Education. What we have is a real big debate in this country about where did we come from. I think the most controversial thing that we're doing in Texas is that we are emphasizing, we passed it 15-0 by the board, that we're going to emphasize the importance of the founding fathers and the founding principles of this country. And we're going to emphasize the primary source and key documents, the Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Magna Carta from the British.
What about our national evolution of politics since then? I mean, you know, you've got Veterans Day replacing Martin Luther King Day on the list of holidays first graders should be familiar with. Okay, but that Martin Luther King Day is not exactly nothing in 2010.
A lot of the debates over what's included and not included is something that I have not spent that much time personally on. I'm looking at the more general ideas of where are coming from. You can make good arguments on who's included and not included. You know, with the Hispanics and with the minorities, we've added a lot of minorities. We've added a lot of Hispanics. What we have done is we have increased the number of significant minorities in our history standards. And I think that's important because when I was growing up in Dallas, Texas, I never learned about W.E.B. Du Bois and his important role that he played in American history. Mm-hmm. I found out about that in a Black history course when I was in the U.S. Army over in Berlin, Germany. I'm going. So I think it's
a long
very
way from
important
grade school.
I think it's very important that we include those figures, and they are going to be included. There's been a lot of misreporting. That's why one of the reasons I took this opportunity to speak with you today.
We're glad you're here, and people want to speak with you. Paul in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on the air with Don McElroy and Paul Boyer.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had a question involving the raging that can happen between academics and folks of faith-based regarding the issue of origins.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole evolution thing, it's a theory, it's a good one, it's recognized as such. And so, like, when Mr. McElroy is presenting it as, well, let's look at our options as a theory, how does this compare to other theories, like ones mentioned in the Bible specifically, or, you know, why is there such a raging when you have scientists, men and women of renown, who believe in creationism, why is there such a raging when it's, okay, let's take a step back and learn about the other options?
Paul Boyer, I mean, I know science is not your field. Evolution is pretty well settled in science, a theory, but quite a deeply settled theory. You hear Paul's question.
I did, and I think what the various calls are illustrating is that this issue of textbook standards is really part of a larger cultural debate and conflict that's going on in American society that is really taking many forms and is part of our contemporary history and needs to be studied and understood as part of our contemporary history. And it's this debate and this larger cultural context that I think sometimes gets lost when we focus quite narrowly on one specific component of it.
Though some scientists, including in Don State, are worried about, you know, losing track of the science that the country needs to succeed. I want to bring another voice in here, if I may. Kristen Amundsen joins us from Washington. She's communication manager for the education think tank Education Sector. She's formerly a school board member for nearly a decade in Fairfax County, Virginia. Kristen, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
What do you think is going to happen? There's a lot of talk lately about a core curriculum for the whole country. What's coming there? And does the kind of debate we're seeing in Texas and the moves there factor into that? Could what Texas decides be, you know, influential in U.S. governors are now calling for a more national curriculum? Could Texas shape that?
I think that Texas has shaped it for the last, really since Reconstruction. Texas has been very influential because of their peculiar method of textbook adoption. The national standards that are currently out are both English and math. Science is next on the agenda, and history will be the last, and I predict that will be, and you're hearing some of that conversation in this last hour, that's going to be the real Donnybrook. But I think that the very grave concern, can I just say, representing mm-hmm. former school board members, parents from states outside Texas, we look with enormous dismay and disappointment at the Texas School Board. We are very concerned about the politicization of American history standards. We don't want that in Virginia. We very clearly want to send a message to textbook publishers that if it makes it in Texas, it's not going to make it in places like Virginia. We at least do recognize the importance of Thomas Jefferson. He's kind of our home guy, you know. And
yes, of course. You've got the home place.
We feel rather strongly about Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, Kristen, stand by right there for just a moment, if you would. I want to get one more call or two in here. Jerry in Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, interesting debate. Several weeks ago, there was a rally, and it was called Protect Your Education. And that sounds all well and good and everything, but when you looked at some of the people who were participating in that, I mean, these were groups I wouldn't want my kids to go to, let alone have things like that published in the textbooks. I mean, they were socialists at best and Marxists at worst. And the one gentleman made the comment about Richard P. Feynman, and
the physicist.
He was talking about the science. It was cargo cult science in his book, and was surely you're joking, Mr. Feynman, on page 343.
So you're happy? What you think? There's been too much liberalism in American education. Is that your point, Jerry?
Well, in some cases, yes. I mean, if they're going to show, they ought to show both sides. I mean, if they're going to politicize one, they ought to politicize them both.
Jerry, thanks for calling. Kristen, what about it? What about the argument that American education sort of leaned liberal for a long time, and this is just a corrective? What do you say, Kristen?
Well, I certainly sat through hours and hours of textbook approval hearings in Fairfax County. I never heard parents saying that they were interested in replacing one set of biases with another. They are interested in presenting a much more accurate and balanced position. Now, I think that is best comes from involvement of highly qualified professionals like historians and classroom teachers. Those are the people who really know best. You know, one of the things that concerned me was one of the people that Mr. McElroy put on the textbook review panel or on the panel developing these standards is a guy named Peter Marshall, who argued that things like Hurricane Katrina are God's punishment for a nation that tolerates gay people. I don't think that sort of political philosophy ought to be part of determining how we look at characters like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson.
Don McElroy, what do you say when you hear Kristen in Virginia say, no, thank you? What's going through your mind, Don?
I think she doesn't understand what's actually happened. I think she's understanding the misreporting that's been done about this. I love Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, I quote, he was the deist that were able to state in the Declaration that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, they're endowed by their Creator. Now, those principles that he enunciated, they go back to a deep underlying idea that there's truth, there's a Creator, and that we're created. Those are the ideals that we need to be put in our standards, and I'm glad that they're going to be there.
Well, we learn a lot in an hour like this, and we're grateful to everybody for participating in it. Don McElroy, former chairman of the State Board of Education in Texas, still on the board until January. We'll be following Mr. McElroy, and we appreciate your time with us from College Station, Texas today.
Thank you.
Paul Boyer, Professor Emeritus History, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Wonderful to have you with us today, Professor. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
And Kristen Amundsen at the Education Sector. Kristen, thank you very much for joining us from Washington.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.